Coming up on this week's episode of Check Your Balance is our formula for the right number of savings accounts that you should have. Stick around, that's coming up next.
Check Your Balances is a show produced and owned by Kraftwerk Capital. The views expressed by the hosts and their guests are personal opinions and should not be considered personal financial advice or the opinion of Kraftwerk Capital. All investments have risk and may lose money. Consult with your financial advisor, tax preparer, or attorney prior to implementing anything discussed, and please do not use this show as the sole basis for financial decisions.
Welcome back to another week of Check Your Balances. I am Ross Anderson, joined as always by my friend and co-host, Dan Maseka. What's happening, buddy?
Hey, not too much. It's good to see you post-vacation, Ross, in the house today.
Post-vacation. I've had a heck of a start to the year. I feel very bougie saying this, but in the first, 6 weeks of 2024, I've been to Colorado and skied, and I just got back from a birthday trip with some friends to the Bahamas. So I'm having a great start to the year.
The mountains and the beach, you can't do any better than that pairing.
It's true. Yeah, you go get really cold skiing and then you go thaw out somewhere. And I don't have any other travel planned this year at the moment. So that might be it. We may be talking about this next year at the same time, but this tends to be a good time of year for me to kind of get away for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a fan of having travel booked because it's something to look forward to. And, you know, if you have nothing out there in the future, it can feel like you're just spinning in circles. So
I agree. I do think having it on the calendar is a nice thing. It gives you something to talk about. People ask you that all the time. Oh, you got any travel coming up? If you've got nothing to say, even if that's the answer, I don't know. That doesn't feel good to me. Even on this trip, well, granted, we're in the middle of travel. People were like, well, are you going anywhere else this year? And I was like, nah, this is it. I'm done. And now it makes me want to plan something else. So who knows?
Yeah.
I do think a lot of people think that way. And that's related to our topic today. We're not talking about travel necessarily. We are talking about how many bank accounts you should have and how to use them. Dan, how many bank accounts do you think you have right now?
Well, a very timely question because I have two more than I did yesterday. Because I think we talked about this on the podcast where you got a $900 offer from Chase to open up a couple accounts.
I did.
I can see where I am on the totem pole because that offer came in for me a couple days ago. And I went ahead and grabbed it. So I have five bank accounts, five personal bank accounts.
All right.
Including savings.
So, and you know what? One of our listeners wrote in, this came to us from Jason. So shout out to Jason. He also got that Chase bonus offer and took care of it and then transferred everything back to his Ally savings and is earning his 4.35%. So he took that $900, put it in his pocket, just like you will. And yeah, no, I think that's great. So here's where this came from. I guess just to give a little context to why we're talking about this on the show, I was working on a financial plan with a client a few months back, and this is not a groundbreaking structure that I came up with. This is simple stuff. This is stuff everybody can do. But here's basically what I saw them experiencing, which is on a month-to-month basis, they were saving a considerable amount of money. They were putting money into a savings account and they were choosing not to consume it in the month that it came in, right? So great. We love that. That bucket was kind of multi-purpose for them. It was an emergency fund. It was what they dipped into for their travel. Ultimately, it was for some other things that were kind of happening, maybe not even this year. And what it did to me as I was trying to understand their savings rate was make me confused. Now, that's just because if we're putting a bunch of money in, but some is flowing out, that's not really part of your savings rate for a long-term purpose, as far as I consider it. When I think of savings rate towards retirement goals or long-term planning, that's the most important number for me. It's what percentage of your income do you choose not to consume in a year? What percentage are you putting into 401ks, long-term savings, or things that are going to come down the road? And if I put $100, $500, $1,000 away this month, but I spend it in June because I go back to the islands, that's great. I think that's still budgeting properly. And that's a good thing, but it's not necessarily long-term savings. So even though you go, well, I saved $1,000 this month, I'm like, well, when are you going to spend it? And so I think we've tried to talk about this in a way that aligns that savings system with how you're actually thinking about it and just makes it clearer. And that's for us that are people that kind of hate budgeting. You and I are not budgeters. We are almost specifically anti-budgeters.
I would call us overtly anti-budgeters, but I will frame this issue in a little bit of a different way as well, because you and I are looking at this trying to solve a different problem. So for the average person who puts $1,000 away, that is a good thing. You are saving that money with the understanding that you may dip into it later. But why that's difficult for us is we're trying to forecast a forward-looking number for retirement and need to understand how much is going to persist in that savings account and what the sustainable savings rate is so that we can figure out how much you're likely to have later. But if you say, I save $1,000 a month, but 500 of it comes back out, we can't give you credit for that $1,000 a month forever. It's really $500 a month that we're saving and accruing for the future.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So it's not that you're not saving it. You are. But in terms of a long-term plan, if I put in the software and I say you're saving $12,000 a year, but the reality is more like $6,000 a year, I've given you something that's overly rosy. And that's what we're trying to avoid, is not necessarily to call it good, bad, or otherwise, but we want to make sure it's accurate. So for folks that are in this situation, first of all, if you're trying to figure out your savings rate and you're doing this, if you're using kind of this one bucket approach, here's how to do it. Pull up your statements and look at where the account was this time last year. That's
yep.
Look at a point-to-point comparison. If you are putting meaningful dollars in, but you're kind of using it sometimes, you're dipping into it, that's what you have to do. That's what you have to do to figure out your savings rate, is look at a point-to-point comparison so that you actually understand, I had X last year, I have this year, that's what I'm saving, is that difference. So that's the first thing I would say, is if you're sitting here listening to this going, yeah, that's me, you guys are talking to me, that's how you go figure it out.
I'm a big fan of this. It's super simple, first of all. You don't need to do any funky math. You don't need to comb through 100 statements. It's as simple as the February 2023 statement to the February 2024 statement. What's the difference? You can even expand that to like your checking, your credit cards, and you know, sometimes there are hidden costs over there that you're building up and not really thinking about as spending because I still have the cash in my savings account. But that's still really, you know, an offset against what you've saved if you're letting other expenses build up in the background.
So the extreme version of what we're getting ready to recommend is basically called sinking funds, right? We're kind of doing a sloppy sinking fund. That is a bad name for this episode. That's not what we're going to call it. But sloppy sinking fund is basically what we're talking about, which is, it's about kind of creating some buckets on where to put the money so that you can more accurately identify what's actually going on. So I think this is helpful for a couple reasons. Number one, you might be putting too much into actual savings. Like you might be just putting too much cash relative to what you need in there. And I know people that build too much cash and they should be redirecting that savings into a brokerage account. They should be redirecting it into increasing their 401k contributions or whatever the vehicle is that's going to make sense for you. This is going to start to help you identify, are you just saving more than you need in pure cash? On the other hand, it's going to help you identify if you're in the other camp that feels like you're doing this really disciplined savings approach, and it turns out you get to the end of the year and there's nothing in there, or it hasn't grown at least because of the way that you're saving and the way that you're using it. So the recommendation is really three tiers. The first tier is the most important one, which is emergency fund. We talk about this all the time. Planners talk about this all the time. I believe our range is somewhere between 3 and 9 months of expenses on what should be in your emergency fund. That's going to be a static amount. When you get the emergency fund built, stop. Don't continue to add money to it unless you actually have an emergency and you need to dip into it. So you're going to determine what your target is. So Dan, we've talked about this a bunch, but 3-month target would be people with like stable incomes, right?
Right. 2W2 earners. You're not self-employed. You have a fairly predictable paycheck coming in. Nothing very volatile in your picture.
Yeah. And 3 months, to go back to a term, and I saw this used. That's kind of FU money, right? To quote our friend J.L. Collins, if you needed to leave your job at the drop of a hat because your boss is a jerk, you've got 3 months of runway. Probably more if you're in a dual income household, if you have 3 months of expenses and then two income earners. That gives you so much power to make different decisions, to absorb the blows, and to generally be prepared for whatever's coming.
Totally. Yeah, I think that's a good baseline. And then, as you mentioned, the window is wide because there are a whole lot of other possibilities beyond two stable earners in a household.
Yeah. When we start getting to 6 months of emergency savings, for me, that's people with a little bit more variability to their income. If you are in a commissioned sales role, if a big portion of your annual income depends on a bonus where the company doesn't have to pay it, if it's equity grants, if it's profit sharing, that type of thing, where at some point a downturn in the economy or simply the business performance of where you work means lower money this year, I think you should be thinking about 6 months. And then for more volatile incomes, I would push it up to even 9, where, you know, and kind of you and I are sort of in this category. I think we have enough things going on that sort of smooths it out. We diversify each other a little bit in the way that we've run our businesses. But yeah, the more variable your income is, if you're like us and the stock market drops 20% and our income drops 20% as a result of it, right? Like, we are directly linked to some of the market performance that is very volatile. You should be pushing that emergency fund a little bit higher.
Yeah, I had an interesting scenario recently as well, where I'm working with someone who has a very specialized skill set, where if something were to happen to his employment or he left his job, it wouldn't be so simple to find a replacement job because there are only a handful of opportunities for someone who does what he does. You know, you think about being like an NFL head coach, for example, you know, there's a 32 opportunities to get that job again if you lost your job. 31, I guess.
Tier two, I'm going to kind of do these a little bit out of order. Tier two, for me, I'm going to call the operational savings. So this is intended to be used. Tier two is going to be the money that is for travel, that is for the things that come up. When Dan gets all teary-eyed looking at a guitar through the window of a music store and goes, "She will be mine," and decides, "I'm taking that home today," this tier of money is unapologetically spent. Unapologetically spent. It is intended to be spent. This is your overflow bucket for, I made this money this month. I don't have anything I need to spend it on right now. But if I spend it 3 months from now, I don't care. I love this bucket. I love the idea of this bucket.
This is the treat yourself bucket.
This is the treat yourself bucket. Exactly. This is the money that you simply are not going to feel bad about using. It is not really in your long-term savings plan, but I think this is the most important bucket to have once you've got the emergency fund built up, because it means that you're preparing for things that you want to do. It means you're not behind the eight ball all the time, putting them on a credit card and then trying to earn your way into it. This is kind of the sinking fund for whatever. Now, I don't label it. Some people really want different accounts for all their stuff. That gets way too complicated for me. You could have an account for travel. You could have an account for blah, 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 blah. I want one account that if it's at zero at the end of the year, I do not care. That to me is what I'm going to use for my fun money.
How do you decide how much goes into that bucket?
I think it's by doing the reverse operation and figuring out how much you need to be saving towards the long-term goals and mm-hmm. making that the remainder.
Okay. And then presumably we also have basic operations like the rent, the mortgage, the food, all this other stuff, which would not find its way into the treat yourself bucket.
I don't think it goes in there at all. Yeah. Cause for me, the true like main account is going to be your checking account, right? Salaries come in. Maybe you start to redirect some of these other things that we're talking about off of the paycheck. But to me, the rent, the mortgage, the car payment, the groceries, the whatever you're spending month to month is just going into a checking account. So these are the, I'm not planning to spend it this month categories. operations account. The third one for me is kind of the midterm goals. So to me, I would categorize that as a longer term savings, because I think a lot of people need to save for some things like whether it's down payment on a car, down payment on a house, renovation on a kitchen. These are things that we would put into a financial plan and say, hey, listen, kitchen reno might be 25, 30 grand. It's going to be tough to come up with that unless you're a super high income earner. But on a month to month basis, you're not going to have that laying around in most cases. That's going to be for those goals.
So emergency fund, a static. That's a box checker. We know the number that needs to be there. Once you hit it, you check the box. That last category, the midterm, we can forecast that to some extent. So if we're doing a financial plan, normally we know what's coming 3, 4, 5 years down the road. Also, you know, if you think about the typical home maintenance costs, I think they say 1.5 to potentially 3% of the value of your home can be thought of as being spent on improvements, not every year, but on average. So if you're looking for something to roll into something like that, you could be aggressive and proactively put that number away for the new roof or siding.
Yeah.
And then the other one is less formulaic, but it's more so the remainder after you've accounted for the other things and your savings goal. You can put the float, the additional float from your income into that treat yourself bucket and have shame-free, guilt-free spending on yourself or your family or others, if you're kind.
So yeah, let's put some numbers to this, right? So using your number, if you're budgeting for 1.5% of your home value in home maintenance over time, and I don't think it's just maintenance. I think that's improvements. Yes, it could be higher than this. And
keeping it current, keeping your home current.
Yeah, making sure that you've got money for the water heater when it goes out, but also every once in a while, you're going to need to brush up a few things, right? So if you're in a $500,000 house, that's $7,500 a year. So if you're getting paid, you know, two times a month, that'd be $300 every pay period going into that. That may be a spicy number for some people, and other people, they may completely shrug at that and go, yeah, I can get that done. Hopefully, it is all relative. Hopefully, your home size is kind of relative to your income and that these things have been kept in check. But that may be a challenging number on its own to get into that midterm bucket, depending on what you're doing and where you're at, if you're paying down debt, all of that stuff. But that, I think, is a good baseline for that midterm bucket. Normally, that's going to be a lower number than that operations bucket, because for a lot of people, their primary savings mechanism is still going to be their 401k or whatever they have through their employer, right? This is kind of intended to help you start building outside of that, which I think is where a lot of people struggle with their financial planning is, I put that on autopilot. What do I do with the rest? How do I create some structure and some predictability around the rest when I don't really know? That's why we're giving guidelines here. It's not because we know your situation. We're just trying to give you some sort of target to start thinking about, and then you can build your personal plan around it.
Right, absolutely.
So in that example, you'd basically create the midterm target based on maybe that home value estimate. And then the rest of what you don't think you need in a month is going to go into the guilt-free operations account, right? So that's how you would structure this, is you ultimately end up with, I've built my emergency fund. Every month I put a few $100 into my midterm goals, and that's kind of there for when I need it. And then the rest is going to go into this overflow account where, yeah, I don't care. It's great. It's there for me to spend it. That's its purpose.
And I don't know how you look at this, but if I were to prioritize, goal number one is getting the emergency savings to cruising altitude. So I would avoid temptation of funding the other buckets too heavily until I can check that emergency box check.
No question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's an important bucket. Now, if you're at 3 months and your ultimate target is 6, okay, I'm willing to accept in that situation that once you get to that first baseline target, that if you wanted to start splitting the number out, I can live with that. Ideally like to see it done, but I don't mind if somebody's got 3 months of savings, if they start to kind of put some money in the treat yourself bucket. I do mind if you've got $0 in savings and for an emergency and you're like, well, yeah, I gotta go to the Bahamas. That's not good. That's not what we want.
I like this format. When you talked about how many savings accounts you should have, I'm like, I don't know, one. How many savings accounts do you need? Because I've seen people take it to the extreme under the like very highly scrutinized budget process where they have a savings account for everything that they're going to spend throughout the year that's not recurring. And that gave me a lot of anxiety because, first of all, I'm like an all or nothing person. And the first month that my number didn't add up to the number I needed to spend, I'd be like, well, this is nonsense. I'm going to get rid of this whole schematic and start from zero. This is setting you up for much more success because, you know, it's easy to track. Each bucket has a designed purpose that you know when you can tap into it for. And it's just not, you're not logging into your online bank and seeing 500 tiles there. It's three or four, you know.
And for me, I like having these at different institutions. Like, I don't know what it is about that. And I really, I've talked about this before, but very early on in my financial life, not even my financial career, this is pre getting into this business, I struggled to save. I was not a saver. I am a natural spender, right? Like that's just where my baseline is. I have had to learn savings habits. Hopefully, if you're sitting there having these same problems, you can hear that coming from me. This is not natural to me at all, right? Like there's no finger wagging going on for me. I've struggled with anything out there that anybody's struggling with. I would have checking, savings, total every time I logged into my bank. And to me, that's the only number I read. That was a failure for me because it's 0 days to transfer between two accounts at the same institution. That was as accessible as anything to me. It was important that I got that 3 days away. And now most of these ACHs happen in like 2 to 3 days, depending on where you are. That's part of why I use Marcus, is their ACH is pretty fast. But like, yeah, to me, getting that off of the screen so that it did not look and feel and act as available was so critical to ultimately learning how to save. So I always prescribe that. Plenty of people don't have those problems. They don't have that self-discipline issue that I had to overcome. So if you can do that, if you can do 10 accounts at the same bank and not actually look at the total, good on you. Like that makes no difference to me if you can actually do it that way. But if you're lying to yourself and you're actually cheating and not saving anything because that's how you're doing it, get it to a different bank.
Yeah. And again, I think that's why this framework works well too, because you know what you should be doing into each account and you'll know and see if you've been cheating yourself, because you'll know that your emergency fund has dropped below the target number that you have. You'll see that you're going backwards in your home maintenance without home maintenance costs or whatever midterm costs you have. And like you said, treat yourself can be zero. That's just you choosing when to realize the enjoyment of that money.
Yeah. I mean, if you have trouble getting to that, it's going to be interesting to look at your spending habits. And hopefully that doesn't mean you're overspending and using credit cards and digging yourself a hole. But it is difficult to get out in front of some of these things. It means you do have to go past the original target of kind of where you wanted to be. You have to oversave a little bit to have that cushion there. But it's so powerful once you do. And to me, I think that's a great place to be. It's an aspirational place to be if you can be saving ahead of the things that you want to do and not always playing catch up.
And that's when finance gets exciting, because now you don't have to aggressively save into your cash buckets. You have money to use to invest in the stock market or side projects, whatever it is that would be more interesting or at least more profitable for you without having to worry about the uncertainty of tomorrow.
I think that's it. I don't have anything else to add to this. I'm curious if people out there have thoughts on this method. What has worked for you? What's not working for you? If you've got things that you want to share with us, checkyourbalances@outlook.com is the email address for the show. We love hearing from you. I hope this was interesting and it wasn't just us babbling about savings accounts again. But we appreciate everybody tuning in this week and hope you'll come back next time.